My name is John Hammack, and welcome to our podcast, The Data Drive, brought to you by Treasure Data. If you've recently checked the weather on weather.com, used Uber, made a reservation at booking.com, bought something from Best Buy, looked up someone on the white pages, watched a movie at Comcast Infinity, played League of Legend, watched news on CNN.com, or placed a bet with Bet365, you've interacted with one of the key value store or time series databases, which are the raison d'etre of one company called Basho. Basho has been at the forefront of big data, IoT, and the hybrid cloud since their inception in 2008, and Basho leverages heavily their experience in low-latency distributed systems to maintain their position. As traditional relational databases lack the flexibility and scalability to handle massive amounts of unstructured data, a few key technologies have emerged. One is a key value store, which are great for storing things like user and session data. Another is time series databases, specifically optimized for time series data, including IoT device data. Yet another is masterless architectures, which are designed for reliability and fault tolerance. There is the ability to build and scale these architectures on commodity hardware. There's the ability to handle millions of concurrent requests with very low latency and no connection pool issues. There is the ability to handle multi-structured data within a single data store. There is the use of a subset of SQL to create and query tables within a data store. And there is the integrations with many other big data technologies, including Apache, Spark, Redis, and Mesos. Talking with today's guest, Pavel Hardak, product manager at Basho, we'll not only learn about React's products and how they address and incorporate these points, we'll also learn about React's KV and TS offerings and how they integrate with other technologies, including Treasure Data. You can learn more about our integrations blog series by Googling Integrate Zendesk, Salesforce, and Postgres. But first, a word from Treasure Data. If you're a business decision maker, a data analyst, or data scientist, you realize the value that analytics has in growing your business. Analytics helps you improve your product so you can actually focus on the customers, what they use the most, and what needs the most improvement. Analytics helps you improve your marketing so you can hone in on those people who are most likely to purchase your product, as opposed to casting a wide net and hoping for just a few fish. Lastly, analytics helps you improve your operations so you can, for example, catch a service that's going down, mitigate a catastrophic event, or scale your offering or infrastructure at a reasonable rate, rather than based on over or underestimating. Treasure Data offers a cloud-based, open-source-based, community-supported data application platform to help you ease or even eliminate the cost and burden of building your own data analytics pipeline from scratch. Our open connector, our schema on read ecosystem, means we can integrate with nearly every data store and visualization tool out there with the schema headache eliminated. If you want to get started right away, and we hope you do, you can go to treasuredata.com to sign up for our 14-day trial.
How did you end up getting into this role? Like, tell me a little bit about you, like where you're from and how you got your background into this, and how do you end up where you are now?
Yep. So I'm originally from Israel. Mm-hmm. So I got my engineering degree from Technion. It's Israel Institute of Technology, supposedly one of the best engineering schools in the world.
Is that in Tel Aviv or?
It's in Haifa.
Haifa, okay.
Yeah. And so that kind of like, that's the place, you know, many, many people graduated to become leaders of the industry, founders of multiple companies. In Israel, in Europe, in United States, a lot. So especially in the Bay Area and Massachusetts, some three state and like around New York, New Jersey. Number of Nobel Prize winners. Really good school. I got engineering degree, and during the studies, I already started to work as a programmer part time. And then continued into different engineering roles. My first serious job was with the Tricom Corporation. at the time when Tricom was still big and powerful. It was like trying to compete with Cisco. It was second behind the Cisco. It was so many years ago that, you know, like Cisco went all the way up and Tricom like roughly stayed and then slowly disintegrated. Now it's like part of somewhere like inside the HPE Hewlett Packard Enterprise. So several years there, then in another company doing kind of more engineering management roles. Mm-hmm. And we did like really, really cool stuff engineering wise, like including like a number of patents, very innovative stuff, mostly oriented on networking and telecom. The company was at the time was one of the pioneers of metro Ethernet. So bringing the Ethernet technology into metropolitan networks. Mm-hmm. Today is considered something that so clear. At the time, SONET, SDH, ATM were ruling technologies. And the Ethernet was kind of young upstart, never designed for this one. So we did like extremely interesting stuff, both in hardware and in chips and optics and in software and the management. So it was great. And VCs were standing in line to give us money. So I guess like the company got like before it was sold something like about $180 million in terms of so money was never a problem, like, but
that's great time,
yeah, at the time we created like so innovative and so groundbreaking products, and we were the founding member of Metro Ethernet Forum, the company. Mm-hmm. A small company. We established a number of sites. So our headquarters actually was in Santa Clara, and the CEO was, so company was global from the very beginning.
Mm. So that's the first time you kind of came over to the area, or?
No. I was from the Tricom Corporation. Or Tricom had their headquarters at Great America in Santa Clara. And at the time, we had multiple locations in the United States, like a number of locations in Massachusetts around Boston, pretty big place in Chicago, like inheritance from U.S. robotics days, and also like around the world. So I was mostly traveling to Europe at the time, Germany, France, like north countries, but Italy, Rome. Tricom was pretty big company, about 12,000 people with presence with 80 countries, something like that.
Tell me a little bit about the company you're with now. So you're with Basho. You're obviously working with Ryok. Why did you end up making the switch? I mean, it's kind of a jump from Ethernet to databases and to key value store databases.
I worked for Fatica for that company, I kind of started to think like what happened. We did like better product than anybody else, but financially we were like pretty moderate success. Eventually, like we did some good deals, but we generated like tens of millions of dollars in revenue, but we didn't become the second Cisco, right? And everybody expected us to become the second Cisco. And I spoke to a number of very smart people I respect until this day, and one of the things they said, like, it sounds like I will not go into details, but when we discussed like some moves on some decisions, sounds like kind of like your product management was not up to the task.
Okay.
And I said, like, you know, I wish there was somebody like me as a product manager, because like engineering, we had like extremely good team. But frankly, our product management was kind of like nice people, you know, nice, not great,
mm-hmm.
not sharp enough. Not, I was able, kind of, at the time, I was leading engineering teams. Like, you know, I can be engineering manager, or I can be expert programmer any day. So I will try to be product manager. And if it doesn't work, I will go back. It was 11 years ago, and so I'm still trying to understand if I'm good product manager. Going from company to company, went to the bigger companies, spent some time learning how to do that. Become interested in big data, and then started to work with the analytics, big data, cloud, Hadoop, and then NoSQL databases. So a year ago, Basho reached out to me, and then they kind of tried to hire me after my previous company has been acquired. And we know Basho because we used their database as part of our company back then, called Boundary.
Now part of right. Okay.
So, I wasn't really interested because I used to work with databases for almost 20 years, but I never considered myself to be a database expert. I'm a solution guy. So,
right.
And then they said, yeah, we actually really need somebody to come and say how to use React, not as React, but React as part of the bigger stacks. What kind of integrations you need, how to operatorize, how people want to work with that, how to become part of their ecosystems. And of course, we discussed all the right forms like Spark, Mesos, Kafka, Redis, Elasticsearch, Solr. So, sounds like challengeable, interesting. And React is also one of the things that when you know and work with React, usually people are very satisfied. But React, unlike some other companies, doesn't spend too much money on marketing. So it's still pretty much one of the best kept secrets of the IT technology.
And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit more about that technology as well. I know that React is a key value store database. Tell me a little bit more about it and tell me what makes it and the products that you're building around it special.
Yeah, so these days we actually have two main products. React mm-hmm. KV, which is the original product, as you mentioned, the key value database, and that's the product which still generates 90% of our revenue and extremely trusted by many customers. Mm-hmm. And then we have a new product called React JS Time Series, which was introduced this year, and we open sourced it this year. And that product is younger. It shares most of the core code with React KV, but actually it's highly focuses on specific time series use cases. Now, what is special about React? So mm-hmm. React is the distributed database by design, meaning mm-hmm. like, unlike some other databases which were created for the single node and then somehow retrofitted or enhanced to be a cluster. So for example, like MongoDB or Neo4j or Postgres or Oracle, which mm-hmm. you can run in cluster, but that was not original design. So they come with some ideas, kind of sharding or proxying or master-slave or active-active or standby. So it kind of works, right? Unlike that, some other new generation databases like React, they use very new ideas originally introduced by a seminal paper from Amazon called Dynamo paper. The thing is, this kind of database is masterless, meaning like all nodes are equal. You can add more and more and more nodes as you grow, and the scalability is there. There is no single point of failure, because like unlike sharding or master, if shard goes down, you lose like 10 or 15 or 20% of your data. Kind of okay, because the rest is still there, unlike single node, but you lost 20% of your data. Or if your master dies, you lose access to all your data, right? Like, for example, as with MongoDB. But with React, you have replication. So each data part is replicated across three nodes by default or more, if you want. And then each node actually can play all the roles. So it's masterless, so you can interact with query each node, and it will know how to redirect the request. So very simple, very elegant architecture, and which allows to do very efficient handling of key KV use cases. Key value means it's a schema-less. Unlike traditional databases, there is no create table, there is no types in KV buckets, just like mm-hmm. key and value. Of course, like inside value, you can keep anything, and we actually have some enhancement. But if you keep JSON there, or you can like have some tags to have secondary indexes, or even like a built-in MapReduce mechanism. But the basic idea, it's a key value. So it's schema-less, meaning it's extremely flexible. You don't need to change the schema when you change your application.
Right.
So flexibility, scalability, speed, of course. And speed is very easy to improve by just adding more and more nodes, because the queries and the data will be distributed across those nodes. So you just, instead of like growing up like horizontally, so vertically, sorry, you grow up horizontally by adding more inexpensive machines. But that makes React really efficient for such use cases.
Nice. Now, I wanted to stick one step back. Did you mention that so React TS is also, like React KV, it is also a key value store database, if I understand correctly?
So React TS also has the KV functionality as part of that, except some exotic parts which still are not enabled. But it adds, in addition to the KV buckets, so the abstraction which we use for KV, logical buckets, it adds what we call TS tables. So in time series, unlike key value use cases, people do have a structure. You know, when the sensor is there, you know, like it's a location, it's ID, it's a timestamp, of course,
mm-hmm.
Several columns, like usually metric columns, like integer or floating point, sometimes boolean, sometimes strings. So in time series, we do have this schema. So it's kind of like interesting. So it's a database with schema, which is distributed, kind of similar to Cassandra or similar to some other databases. Mm-hmm. But it does inherit all the good stuff from React KV, being it's a distributed, masterless, extremely reliable, etc. But mm-hmm. also adds the feature which is very relevant for time series, meaning range scan slice query.
Mm-hmm.
The short version is that in key value, you try to distribute all your reads and writes and updates across the cluster as much as possible. So
I see.
If a run and, for example, do multiple writes, each one will land on the different node. That will lead to best scalability and performance, right? Because you try to work all the nodes roughly the same without generating hotspots, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In time series, unlike that, when you write stuff, you want to have some percentage of the data locality, meaning when you run the data from one sensor, you also want to distribute this data across the cluster, right? To get the capabilities and advantages of distribution. But when if you do like each data point on different node, when you come to read this data, you need to go and query like 10, 15 different nodes. And of course, it's not optimal. So what time series does, it allows to specify some what we call quanta of information as a basic part. And then React will magically write this piece of information in consequent matter on one of the nodes. For example, say like, I want my quanta to be like 1 hour or 24 hour worth of data for this sensor. But then when you come and query this information, it will be single seek on the disk, single read. So it makes it like from one side, you get like a lot of speed when you write the data, millions of sensors. On the other side, when you go and ask for this specific question, give me the data for this sensor, all its parameters, or part of these parameters, for last like 6 hours, it will go to the one specific node and will read this data from its disk. So kind of combining the best of two worlds. So and we also like have some nice things on top of that, including limited support for SQL language. Which yet another.
I was going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which kind of yet another totally untrivial way, right? How do you add the SQL support to no SQL distributed database? So we are doing that, and it involves pretty clever stuff. And also ability to have some interesting things like integration with Spark and Spark SQL, right? Something that we hear in many use cases. Also, some things which are more relevant for time series use case, like aggregations.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm interested on like when they measure like CPU or temperature or speed or whatever. I'm very interested in each point, but I actually maybe some more interested in like average or mean or max over the time period of last hour, last day, last week. So we provide these aggregations, and we provide like 7 or 8 functions, like mean, max, medium, average, something like that.
Those are important things to be able to get out of a time series database, of course. I want to take a step back, actually, and ask you some more basic questions about it. So the two products you're doing are React KV, which is the original key value pair offering. Are you also heading up React TS, or are you just doing one or the other?
I'm responsible. I started as responsible for the integrations.
Oh, the integrations. Oh, brilliant.
Yes. Yeah. Probably a week ago, I was asked to take over React TS. We did some reorganization in terms of product management. So, I was asked to step in and take React TS. I have been participating in that as a second hand, but on some pieces of that, mostly because I come from a lot of monitoring and network management, system management background.
Oh, right. Okay. That makes
now
sense.
Now I'm kind of like TS and integrations. And then we have another product manager who works on KV, React clients, and stuff like that.
With React KV, what makes it special? Now, we know that the basic thing of a key value store is that it's extremely fast. You can do queries very, very quickly on it. How did React get into the market with this KV, and what made it special? What made it unique, and what was life like before React KV was introduced? Like, what problem was it? What unique problems was it trying to solve?
Number.
I know that's a loaded question. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So people were totally happy for many years using SQL databases, like Oracle, DB2, Sybase, MySQL, Postgres. Like each one is like an extremely good piece of technology. I've been doing that as well. So what doesn't work when you go like web scale? When you try to create something like Netflix or Facebook or Google, it just doesn't scale up. Or Salesforce, this kind of work, right? Also, even in enterprise solutions, when you go and try to create something like I worked many years for telecom companies, and we used the Sybase and the Oracle, so we struggled each time, even like for the simple ways, like how to collect metrics or how to collect logs or CDRs. So when you have machine-generated data arriving all the time, and you need to process and write a lot of data, traditional SQL databases were not good for that. They were designed for the use case when you have unfrequent writes, periodic updates, but multiple reads, like selects and deselects and grouping and stuff like that. So that use case is covered pretty well by traditional databases. When you have like a ratio of writes to reads like 95-5, like time series use case, that's not something that traditional database can have. Or when you go like to web scale applications as Gartner defines them, for example, like Xfinity at Comcast, they support like 50 million users, right? At the same time, multiple services which use them. So when people log in or try to access some channels or try to use movies on demand or try to use services which they resell, like Showtime or HBO, you need to have like first extremely fast and extremely reliable way to extract the user profile, to update the profile, to know what user is doing, what to propose. Is it eligible for this one? Or if it's included as part of subscription, or if it's not, if it's something that it's pay on demand. So all these small questions, but are very basic to run the business. And for example, in Comcast use case, they use React internally for all the profile management. And use, of course, several other databases. That's the thing. No SQL databases didn't replace SQL databases in all use cases. But there are multiple cases where NoSQL actually makes more sense than SQL. even that each database is not as mature and it's not, sometimes it's not as reliable as Oracle. Nothing comes close to Oracle where Oracle, in the use case where Oracle actually stored. But in many use cases, Oracle just was never designed, or Oracle or any other database. Don't have anything against Oracle. Actually, Oracle creates a really great technology, and I used it like for many years. Sometimes you just need like different type of product to solve different type of problem.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, for example, like when you have a document database, Couchbase or MongoDB provide extremely good solution for that. When you need the white table, HBase or Cassandra provides good answer. If you need a graph to support the graph, and I've been working with Oracle to do like really nice solution using to encode the graph database. But then you get the Neo4j, which arguably not as strong as Oracle in many aspects. But when it comes to graphs, it leaves everybody behind, right?
Right. So, yeah, it's so pretty impressive.
That's about use case. For mm-hmm. use cases which naturally fit into key value paradigm, like session data, user profiles, messaging for some cases, and so on. Or shopping cart, of course, right? The original idea of Amazon Dynamo was actually shopping cart to support Amazon Empire, like shopping e-commerce site. So these cases are actually really good fit into key value paradigm. You don't have a schema. So actually, you manage the schema in your application. You need the very, very low latency, but you don't need the joins. You don't need complicated group bytes. So you need a lot of accesses, which may be reads and writes and updates, something that like traditional databases don't do well. And even like some of the NoSQL databases don't really deal well with kind of updates, for example. React does it better than most.
I've had to deal with the upgrade path and a lot of, because I work with a lot of different technologies too. I'm one of our integrations sort of evangelists here. And I also do a lot of data engineering evangelism. So I'm integrating like Treasure Data with pretty much everything that's out there. I mean, I've done everything from Kafka to all the databases you can think of. I've done MongoDB, I've done Postgres, I've done MySQL. I mentioned Kafka. I mean, I could go on and on. I think I've done like 30 different integrations in the last, you know, 3 or 4 months. Those are just the ones that come to mind in my very tired state. I'm not really a morning person. So That's React KV, and React TS is kind of an optimization of that for time series data. Now, one of the obvious optimizations of time series data is that there's going to be a time column added to whatever is already there. What other kind of optimizations were made for React TS, and why didn't you just continue to use KV for sensor and device data? Like, what was the sort of the push for our making a specific time series product?
So the biggest part of time series actually how to optimize it for IoT and time series use cases. Mm-hmm. And the queries are different. Queries are, so how do I say it? The short version is you write horizontally, and you query vertically, meaning if you think about like a connected home example, yeah? And like, for example, thermostat like Nest. So suppose it has 5 or 6 sensors, like humidity, temperature, like location and something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so each thermostat will send the sample of data, like for example, like JSON record with 10, 15 fields. Mm-hmm. And all of them will send them roughly at the same time, once a minute. Okay, mm-hmm. And then you need to very efficient way to actually to reliably write this data into the cluster, mm-hmm. and you need the ability to grow this cluster as your customer's base grows, and your customer base is potentially the whole world, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about like millions of sensors sending the data and each minute, or and hopefully like it will be faster as we go. And then, but when it comes to the, so like first you need to actually ingest huge amounts of writes at the same time. And it's 24/7/365. You don't have, you cannot allow downtime. There's no such thing as downtime.
Right.
So as much as you can like do a really good database, as long as like single node uses sharding, it means that you will lose data when you do some updates or restarts or whatever. Or some networking problems. So you need something that actually works so reliable that it's never down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big challenge to ingest all this data. It's like a huge challenge, which frankly, not can do that. Mm-hmm. The second challenge comes when you query the data. So when you think about, let's say, like you write them horizontally, it means you run. If you think about this, the time x, right? You receive all the data from all the centers with the roughly similar timestamp, rounded to 1 minute, if you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you query the data, your query will usually go not for the whole, like give me the data for the last like 5 minutes or for the whole world. Actually, give me the data for this specific sensor for last 24 hours,
mm-hmm.
right? So okay. Now that's a problem, because in one, when you do like one node, you have this data nightly lined up on your disk. When you do clustered solution, this data would be spread across your cluster. And that means your query will be, read queries will be extremely inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, for example, some other databases, they were kind of really good for writes, not so good for reads, or other way around, really good for reads, but not so good for writes.
Yep, yep.
So in time series, you need both. And that's the second challenge. And the third challenge would be how you interact with such a database. And then where SQL plays the role, because here you have a polystructured data, right? You can have like multiple tables and multiple columns, and you need also aggregations. And of course, it can be done externally to database, but people expect some kind of functionality like arithmetics, aggregation functions, etc. as part of the database. So the next challenge would be like, okay, now I want group by, right? By region, by type, by manufacturer, by vendor. That's another one. Then I would say, okay, now I want like ascending or descending, right? Like top end queries. Those are things we are working for the next version.
Mm-hmm.
So those are challenges in time series database. The good things about time series, data is mostly immutable, so you can have several certain assumptions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So less conflicts. But in some customers, actually, they want to have the limited ability to update the data. For example, sensors was sending some garbage, and then it was restarted, so it will resend the data. And now we need to update the data. Something that doesn't happen too much, but it happens. Same with industrial machines. We spoke with some of our customers, and we know that there is also, when you run a global application, there is also a notion of late arrival data.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they were stuck at some point. And then like they, like data which kind of was supposed to arrive like 1 hour ago, arrived just now. And then you need to recalculate your aggregations.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'm looking at a lot of the use cases on here. I'm actually gonna dig in and learn a little bit more about this on my own time. So one of the kind of end goals I wanted to get out of this interview is I actually want to write up an integration, you know, with Basho or with React. Preferably with Treasure Data as well. But what I'm interested in, and I just emailed you a blog I wrote back in May, 2 months ago, about a three-way integration where I integrated Zendesk, Salesforce, and Postgres for support analytics. And I would be interested if you have any kind of like a three-way integration that you've done or like a multi-part integration. I would love to, if you want to tell me about it right now, you know, along the same line. So you're trying to solve a problem and you're integrating,
It could be React KV, it could be React TS. Well, you do integrations. So tell me about some integrations you've done that you're proud of or you like to to write about.
Yeah, for example, React JS is usually is used as part of, again, the shortcut from the beginning. What we find out that React is used as part of kind of best of breed technology stacks.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike like Oracle stack, when you kind of you have say I get like WebLogic and Oracle database and then reporting solution all from Oracle, or Cloudera when I get like everything like in which can integrate with Hadoop, but all from Cloudera, right? Mm-hmm. Or Hortonworks or IBM. So in React, usually can we provide only database, NoSQL database. So people will use it with other best of breed products. So, and then what we did like during the last year, we created the connectors or integrations to do that. For example, one of the very popular, just started recently, but seems very popular one, is a time series ingestion pipeline. So people would create like pipelines and microservices. So data would be going into Apache Kafka. Then mm-hmm. From Kafka, it would be consumed by Apache Spark, mm-hmm. streaming or batch. And then after some initial validation, it would be written into React JS. And then from React JS, it can be also queried by Spark, for example, mm-hmm. do some machine learning and extract some insights. Or another integration we just started is integrating Grafana to provide nice visualization of the data.
Okay.
Or already integrated with a notebook, like IPython notebooks or...
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So also kind of using the Python client and using the Spark connector to kind of to just explore the data in a different way which we used before. Before, we had a little different world. Like it was kind of like React server, React client, and the rest of the world. This mm-hmm. time, we're speaking about pipelines, microservices. And by the way, the latest one, which we just open source and we will doing like we'll do some marketing push, it's a React Mesos framework. It will run React as part of the Mesos cluster in Korea. React is like first class citizen as part of Mesos ecosystem. So like Spark and React and Kafka and custom microservices, usually Dockerized, will be run in the same cluster.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like, so kind of, when you speak about that, like so kind of integration with Mesos, Spark, Kafka, Apache Zeppelin and Grafana, like you already get like best of the breed stack, which allows you to start doing your time series or IoT application, not from very like from the very beginning. You already have a set of best of the breed pre-integrated technologies.
You got a stack already there. This Grafana, is that a visualization layer or?
Yeah, Grafana is a pretty nice product. That's kind of visualization product targeted on time series. It's pretty popular in monitoring world, but the company behind that is trying to position it as a generic visualization product, so you can connect it to multiple other products.
Oh, nice. I'm going to look into that. Cool.
And it's open source, like actually every one of the products we just discussed. So each one, of course, has a commercial version.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I should probably mention that React is open source. React is an open source product, and probably 95% of our users are not customers per se. They don't pay us money. They help to improve the product by submitting code, by filing bug reports, by spreading the word. But like many other best of the breed products, React is open source product. Both React KV and React JS. And nice. All our integrations, by the way, we don't charge extra for our integrations. Like Spark and Mesos, they're both, and Docker, of course, and the new one will be open source.
Cool. Incidentally, Treasure Data has a connector, and I believe an ingestion from React databases as well. So what I might do is I might build just for my own, you know, for my own study, build an integration between React and Treasure Data. So basically, everything you describe, but switch out Treasure Data for Spark. And then use the for example the IPython notebook to connect to Treasure Data and manipulate the data that way. Did you mention that React had a Python client of its own, or using the Python client to connect to Spark? I wasn't clear on that.
Oh, okay. So Basho provides official React clients in multiple languages, like including Java, Python, Node.js, Ruby, Erlang, PHP, Golang, C Sharp.
Nice.
That's some here. Also, there are like multiple community contributed clients, you know, in the open source world, like some people like to create their own libraries, and all of our clients actually also are open source, so people sometimes do try to take some forks or whatever. Now, when we integrate to Spark, we use either Java or Python. In both cases, we use it internally, so when you create a Spark application which works with React, you can use Java or Scala or Python.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Nice.
And, speak about Spark. We just had a booth at Spark Summit here in San Francisco, and we presented our integration with Spark and React.js. And we actually worked with Databricks to create a Spark with React.js tutorial and as Databricks notebook. And I've been told yesterday that it's going up as part of a Databricks solution. And actually liked our integration really because, you know, it's pretty untrivial to create integration of Spark, which is analytics technology, with operational database. React was never designed to be something like put for analytics. But in time series, we've been able to create some infrastructure support which allowed very efficient access patterns from the Spark side. So look out for my blog on Databricks side. Yep, sounds good. Thank you very much. Pleasure speaking with you.